Welcome to Pet Food Advisors. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Sean Delaney, a board-certified veterinary nutritionist whose company, Balance It, is sought after by pet owners and veterinarians across the world for advice about personalized, optimal nutrition. This show offers well-researched, objective information about pet nutrition, from home cooking to the pet food industry, so you can make thoughtful decisions about feeding your own dogs and cats. This show is a production of Eight Paws LLC and DVM Consulting, Inc., which are solely responsible for its content and are proud to bring you this PSA about the catnip allergy study. Are you allergic to cats? Does your cat or the cat of a friend or family member cause you to sneeze or get itchy, watery eyes? If so, you may be qualified to participate in catnip, a clinical study of an investigational drug combined with allergy shots. Researchers are screening cat allergic individuals at their study sites in Los Angeles, Denver, Chicago, Baltimore, Chapel Hill, Seattle, and Madison. If you're allergic to cats and interested in learning more about the catnip study, go to www.catallergystudy.org. Dr. Sean, it is so great to be with you always, but particularly now there's something called the AAFCO meetings that have been going on, American Animal Feed Control Officials. There we go. I got it right. And there are people that represent or say that they represent pet food, pet owners, and want to worry more about what's in the food that is being made for pets. And they're there pretty much rattling their sabers. And I'm wondering if you think, because you talk to so many vets and also to many pet owners who want to home feed and balance it with your Balance It products, or balance it by choosing different human foods to make their food with. Do you think that your regular, everyday pet owner is aware of what an AAFCO guideline is, what it means to meet those guidelines, since every pet food can and bag mentions it? Is that something that people really care about, understand, care one way or the other?
You know, it's an interesting, I guess, topic. And I think that I would say if we're saying do most, I think most are not aware of it. I don't think that most consumers are aware of AFCO. That's usually how people refer to it. And it's Association of American Feed Control Officials. That's where the AA comes from, the Association of American Feed Control Officials. And just to give a very quick overview, they are made up of state regulatory officials. So most states, if not all, have a regulatory official that is in charge, mainly and historically, to deal with livestock feed.
Exactly.
So they wanted to have regulations. And you have to remember that if we go back 100, 120 years ago, a lot of people had to buy livestock feed. Even if they were not people out on the farm, the main transportation was a horse that, you know, ate hay. And so just like we think a lot about gas prices and, you know,
what's the octane
and am I getting ripped off? And you see the little sticker when you go to the gas station where there's a county official that's measured to make sure that when you buy a gallon, you're actually getting a gallon.
Wow, that's a great analogy. I never thought of that.
Yeah, so it's very similar. So now you're buying, you know, hay or something along those
lines. Corn or oats.
They want to make sure that you are not getting ripped off and that the protein level or the, you know, different ash levels were correct, because, you know, they could cheat you. Basically, you don't get as much performance out of what you're buying from, you know, the people that are selling you the feed. And the feed, really, when we use the term feed, it refers to food fed to animals. When we say food in a regulatory sense, that means food that has been fed to a human.
Right.
And so the feed, when you talk about feed, when you see even the term in the name, you can kind of see where their origins are. Now, what's often is raised is that people will say, oh, that's actually just a puppet group for the industry, the pet food industry.
And I've actually heard that said, because it said that many of the members on it, they say, kind of work for a feed company or a pet food company. But that's not exactly right, is it?
No, there's no voting body.
Right.
You have to be a state regulatory official to be a voting body. They will bring in experts from variety of fields, and so academics as well as people in the industry will provide insight. And I think the exception is that they often will have people from the FDA, so they aren't necessarily a state regulatory official because they're at the federal government level. But the CVM, which is Center for Veterinary Medicine, has people who deal with pet food and feed, and there a lot of attention, you can imagine, is around medicated feed. So feed
right.
that has you know, let's say antibiotics in it. And, you know, if you're giving it to certain animals, there are antibiotics that are used in feed that if given to humans can cause horrible, horrible problems. And so there's, you know, a whole bunch of work of how long till that's cleared out of the milk or the meat. And so there's a lot of effort that I think people don't think about to deal with poultry and pigs and cows. And if you look at the AFCO official publication, and I pulled one off my shelf, they produce one every year. There's a picture of a dog.
They produce it every year. And does someone like you have to buy it, or do they?
I do. That's how they make their money. That's okay. their main way of sustaining themselves.
Okay.
And it, you know, I don't buy it always every year because on the pet food side of things, it's glacial and it's
the change.
And
right.
But, you know, they're in the back cover, typically in many years, I have a silhouette here of a dog, and then there's a chicken, there's a sheep, and then there's a turkey, then there's, I'm assuming, sturgeon. I'm not the greatest on silhouettes of fish. a cow, a horse, and a pig. So, you know, here we have eight images of animals, and only one of the eight is what we probably think about, maybe two if you include the horse as a companion animal. And so these are folks that, you know, are very much focused on feed, and a large portion of the publication is on feed, and their perspective is on feed. And why I think that's important is that I think some of the people who are very passionate about AFCO, and, you know, there are even advocates that will go to their meeting and stuff, what they are struggling with is that they are trying to convert an institution that's been around for over 100 and some odd years, focused on feed and feeding horses and cows and pigs and chicken, to an association that is really what they would hope for, to the standard of human food. And I think that's where, if you really go to the root concerns, the divergence is. So for those folks, they see that they have another family member in their household, they have a human, and they want the regulations to be at that level. And what they don't recognize, I think, is that there are foods that are food grade, that are designed for pets. I think you have a major sponsorship, not that you brought this up or told me to bring their name up, but I think in the past, and you have, is the Honest Kitchen.
They actually aren't sponsors so much as I've been sort of an ambassador. At one point, they were a sponsor of the show Holistic Vets, and I've been an ambassador for them, and I feed it as part of to my dogs as part of their meal, but they had to go in the state of Iowa or some a vowel state, as I rudely call them, they had to go to court so they were allowed to say human grade.
Yeah, food grade. And people love to say human grade. That actually, from a regulatory perspective,
means nothing.
Food grade is the key. And if you say food grade, that means that it has to be for human consumption. And there's a lot of thresholds. Now, then people say, well, what is the difference? What is the difference between feed and food? And there are some. Now, what I would point out, though, is that the advocates for pet food to be more regulated have been successful. And there's FSMA is how most people pronounce it, but it's the Modernization Act. And the Modernization Act goes to both food and, we'll call it, feed. And it's very interesting because the FDA has been working since the big recall in 07. They have been working on new regulations to both first on pet food labels, which still hasn't yet come out, but we hear it will eventually, but then subsequently on enforcing and promoting better food safety through better regulation and better ability to initiate a recall rather than what we typically have now, which is a voluntary recall. And they have come up with rules. And what you see with those rules is that a lot of the rules that applied to food are now being or will be soon applied to feed. And there is a merging, if you will. Now, it's not completely the same that every single thing that you have to do for food is the same for feed, but there is a lot more analogy. And where there is divergence, maybe less and less than what people once thought or had. And what I think is interesting is that because, let's say, the Honest Kitchen is out there, or, you know, my experience when I was at Natura and we made Karma, which is a 95% organic pet food, a dog food.
Right. The first one, Newman's Own, was one of the first.
I think it was the first with a 95% as far as
which
I'm
aware. Which is pretty dramatic.
Yeah, it's dramatic. I mean, you can still have an organic statement at the time in the National Organic Program from the USDA with a 70%, but 95% is basically 95% means everything is organic except for the vitamins and minerals, because the NOP for food doesn't allow you to classify vitamins and minerals as organic.
Oh, that's funny. That's ironic.
So that 5% is really the minerals and the vitamins that have to be included to make it complete and balanced. In any event, the interesting thing from my perspective, being aware of this, is that, you know, the Honest Kitchen is not the only food sold in the world. It's one of the few that is food grade. It is certainly very expensive, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to a lot of other foods. Not to say that it isn't rightfully so. And Karma, when we made it, that was the name of the 95% organic food, was extremely expensive. And it's been, you know, Natura was purchased by Procter & Gamble and now subsequently bought by the Mars family. And, you know, they discontinued Karma because, and I know, I'm sure, it never succeeded in selling and its margins were very, very tight, even though it was expensive. And so what I find fascinating with all this is that the folks that are very big advocates of basically, I think, trying to make animal food more to the point of being appropriate for humans are not the same people who are also then advocating saying you should be buying these brands that are very, very premium. They usually are the advocates who then say you should get a homemade recipe, often from themselves, which is, I think, a little bit unfortunate at times, because it seems like then they're self-serving. You know, what I do, obviously, I spend a lot of time making homemade diets, but I'm never anti-commercial pet food. I never succeed in making supplements for homemade food by saying that commercial pet food is evil and you shouldn't feed it, where there are others that I think, unfortunately, feel that way. And at the same time, concurrently then offer their solution for making food yourselves that you can only get from them.
Well, I would just jump in and say that I haven't seen that to be the case at all. The voices, if you will, in blogs, newsletters, online, that are the most saber-rattling on the topic of commercial pet food companies, you know, should be tarred and feathered and whipped and shamed and humiliated because they put this, that, and the other horrifying, shocking, unbelievable, dreadful thing in with the food. They're poisoning our pets. They're killing our pets. They're making a buck off the backs of our pets that are made sickened by this food. Those voices, maybe there's no more than half a dozen of them. They have no connection to a pet food company at all.
But those same voices, well, my point being is that they are not the ones saying, hey, why don't we go and buy from these companies that make a food grade product? Why don't we?
Oh, I see your point. Right. They're saying, no, everybody's affordable food should be made of a fine and delightful ingredient.
Correct.
And they're still not, keep the price down.
Right. And they're not promoting the companies that have attempted.
That's
to make
a very good point.
And so I find that disingenuous. Maybe that's the right word. And oftentimes some of those handful of people then concurrently say, I'm the only one with a solution because I'm the only one that really cares about animals. And therefore, you should feed my recipe or get my real recipe for me or feed the way I feed.
I see.
Because I'm the only source of trustworthy information.
Well, I guess what we really, in a sense, the fear mongering aspect of it is the part that has made me, as time goes on, having done a bucket of research to write the dog Bible and the cat Bible, and having read sort of the raw information going back 10, 15 years ago about, oh my God, roadkill is in pet food, dead pets are in pet food, their collars and leashes and their euthanized, drugs are still in their system or on them when it's all boiled up and ground up into pet food. And there were at least two books that I know of. They didn't really have any facts, but they certainly had a lot of shock value. And I read all that, and I had the experience that someone might have the first time they would read even some of these more modern blogs. Really, I can't believe it. That's shocking and horrifying. Well, I'm not sure how true it is, but the bottom line of sort of the messaging of that is to instill fear and dismay at all pet food companies and go
and
on the
and doubt.
Mm-hmm. And then go on the presumption that not only are they doing this, there's not really any proof of it, Oh, somebody once may have seen a styrofoam wrapper of slightly outdated chicken that was on its way to a processing plant. I don't know. Did you think that the styrofoam and the plastic wrap on the outdated supermarket meats and poultry that can go to a pet food company, do you think they really put the wrappers in there? I mean, in your opinion, in your knowledge, do you think they do?
No. And the reason I say that is because I don't think people, I mean, I supported a pretty large pet food company and had to deal. We had four people who were full-time dealing with consumer calls.
Wow. And I was, that's a lot for a small company.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting. I mean, we obviously had a very passionate following, and so we probably had a higher percentage of people who were going to spend the time to call or ask questions. And, you know, it wasn't complaints. It was guidance and
information.
And to that point, you know, when I came on board, we transitioned to always having licensed technicians, the equivalent of like a nurse for medicine. And that was very helpful. But what was interesting is I would have to go through the logs pretty much every week or address things that were elevated to me because I was the final person. And we would, you know, sometimes do statistics on it, sometimes look at different things. But, you know, absolutely, if there is something foreign in a kibble or a canned food, you will hear about it. And it is absolutely a main focus to avoid that. So there's all sorts of procedures and work to avoid anything going into a pet food that could be identified as foreign. And so, and you can say, well, then, you know, that's just because they know there's going to be problems. No, because it's very rare. And, you know, where we had issues occasionally is something you would expect in any type of supply chain. You know,
a different color, for example, right?
Well, yeah. And you would use high color variation. So, you know, for example, you might have, let's say, a bag of vitamins that comes in a 40-pound bag, and it's got a drawstring to tear open to then put into your, you know, batch
container, preparing.
And that string, a little piece of the string as you tear it off could fall in, break. Mm-hmm. People will find that. And so you have also, and will call you about it and will be very concerned about that. They'll be concerned about the fact that, you know, you'll see at times that there, even with the best of slaughtering practices, you'll see some hair, you know, that they're, if they're not, you know, you'll see that a lot of times they'll steam the carcass to try to remove all the hair off of a pig or something like that. But it's possible when you're slaughtering a lamb. Think about how much wool there is.
Absolutely.
That it can be in there. But
or chickens, all the feathers, the pin feathers.
That's right. And so you'll find that and you'll get a call about that. Absolutely.
But I'm talking about much bigger scare tactics.
So what I'm getting at is if you are a pet food company, you don't have a way of chopping up styrofoam.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah.
Think about like when you open a foam protected box and how the little bits of foam break off and fly everywhere.
Yes.
It would make a nightmare for you because all those little white bits are not going to magically disappear as it's cooked in the food.
Right.
It's going to be there and it's going to be very visible and very obvious. So there's a lot of incentive for you to not do that very thing because it isn't like you're going to be able to hide it. And it's not
that's
like it's
a
gonna,
great answer.
I mean, even if you wanted to be, you know, not focused on food quality or safety, it's not like you could get away with it in my experience, because that type of product or that type of material would be visible and would be apparent and it would be caught and you'd have a lot of explaining to do.
And that's a great answer.
Yeah, and there's equipment that would suffer from that.
Yes.
So there's a lot of screens and a lot of things that just would slow you down because now it's becoming a roadblock for how things are conveyed or how things are screened. It's going to create work for you. So I don't mean to take it from if they could get away with it, they would. I'm just taking the cynical point of view. Okay, sure, let's say that they had access to this or do it. Why wouldn't they?
From a
logical, you know, perspective, they would get found out. They would have more headaches to deal with it. It would make it harder to produce the food they're trying to produce at a very rapid rate. So.
And when you think, none of us that are on the consumer end of pet food think about the cost of the equipment, but it balances it when you've been making your very specialized prescription diets. It seems to me that recently you had to buy a new machine and it meant that you couldn't buy a new car for a few years. I mean, the machines literally cost $50,000 and more used.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't want to put a bunch of dog collars or styrofoam trays and plastic wrap into a machine made for meat and vegetable matter and, you know, cellulose and so forth. You just wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, and you're citing, you know, I'm pretty small scale.
That's right.
We're talking about, you know, piece of equipment for us. You know, we have screens that, you know, that have to screen material. We're screening, looking for making sure that, you know, product hasn't basically created clumps. So just like any powder, it can clump. And so we're trying to screen out and make sure there's no clumps in it. But, you know, we had to make our own custom screen for our bag dump station. So I'll get a little bit of detail in here, but just to give you perspective.
It's interesting.
And we're a small company, but you know, I had to go buy stainless steel wire mesh. So they call it fabric, stainless steel fabric, basically. But it's basically stainless steel wire that's been weaved or welded. And you buy it at a specialty company. It's unbelievably expensive. And then, you know, I had to make sure that we had the screen attached. It goes over something that's probably about 4 feet by 4 feet for the bag to be put in. And I paid a very, very high-end stainless steel welder to weld every single little end of it. It took him about a day to do it. And you can imagine how much he charged an hour.
And also you had all that downtime for your machines where you couldn't be making food.
We've been working on, you know, this piece of equipment for months to put it together.
Right.
And a lot of little custom pieces and stuff. But the point being is that how careful do you think we are with that screen that we had custom made and welded?
Mm-hmm.
Because if all of a sudden it breaks on us, we're down in production.
Yep.
And we have to go pay someone to fix it.
Yep.
So I don't want to say it from everything is an economic or a time, but it explains why, you know, some of these things that people suggest at times don't make sense, because it's a naivete about the reality that you have to pay for things to be operational. You're trying to be efficient when you're making things because that costs you money, and you don't want to have people have bad experiences.
That's
because
if
you're building your customer base, I can guarantee you that people who find foreign things, if they were to find pieces of styrofoam or long stretchy pieces of plastic, the likelihood of them buying ever from you again is extremely low. And
the internet, they can take a picture with their iPhone and tell the whole world in outrage.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of effort, you know. I mean, the most upset I ever saw the operations people become at Natura, I'll tell you a quick little story, was when we would have tours of our facility, because, you know, we felt very strongly that we had a beautiful facility, which we did, and it was kept and maintained very well. We even went, you know, to the point of, you know, having people come in just, here, have a tour of it.
Really?
Right? And so they would give these tours, and we'd have salespeople often give the tours. And the most upset the operations people came was the time when one of the salespeople thought it would be funny, I don't know if that's the right word, or instructional or informational or have a great deal of interest, if he would sneak into the conveyance line while they were standing there watching a piece of metal, so that he could show how the metal detectors would go off. And you go, why are there metal detectors? Well, it's very common when you're getting grains that out in fields and farms that there's
wire
or wire that has been used.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're talking about screens. When you mill grains, so I mean you basically break them down into small pieces, you have screens on that mill, and you constantly are checking those, but they can break, and then a little piece of that screen that broke off on the hammer mill can go into your food. So you're always checking to make sure that metal doesn't come through for safety, for quality, etc., and also to make sure, frankly, that your machine isn't breaking itself into a million little pieces, because metal coming through other metal
would be brutal.
Exactly. So they thought it would be hilarious to do this. Well, they did it. And what happens when you do that is the entire production line stops and alarms go off left and right.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
You can imagine how upset they were about this little
prank
demonstration that they thought would be funny to show how it worked and how it would detect metal. So I bring that up that there is a lot of effort, a lot of equipment, a lot of focus on looking at these risks and factors to try to avoid them. And that's, you just brought that as an example, which made me think about all these other little
things. It's a great example. And I just want to wrap up by saying that while people may read these things on the internet and everyone seems to like to have a villain in life, sometimes it just makes life more manageable to put all of your energy into a place like, these are the bad guys. And if it can't be Washington, it could be the Pentagon, or maybe it could just be pet food manufacturers. There's so much passion that seems to drive some people to find things to complain about, to finger point about, and to make very angry claims about, that I just think it's very helpful to people that are buying pet food and feeding their pets to not get caught up in that, because it is illogical. It doesn't make sense. And if you take a picture and you put it on a blog of a styrofoam tray from chicken at the supermarket, and you say, this is in pet food, but it's never been in pet food, it's just a picture of a styrofoam tray, you put these images together in people's minds, and because they saw it, a picture's worth 1,000 words, they now believe it. They leave all rational thought or questioning at the door. And that's really all that I'm hoping that people will do, is stop and think. Nobody's out to hurt your animals. No one's out to hurt people. It's a capitalist society. Profits must be made, but not at the risk of destroying your own company with bad blowback and complaints and consumer outrage. So if we can let the people that are outraged just carry on with their stuff, their tactics, their excitement, and go our merry way, I just think it serves us and our pets better. I don't think that the world is a better place if everybody wants to have, a placard and go out in the street with pictures of styrofoam trays saying, this is in my pet food. This is unacceptable. This is in my pet food.
I think there's always room for improvement. But I guess my point is, let's focus the improvement on places where there really is a need and
yes.
where we can make improvements.
Great point. Yeah. A little positivity wouldn't hurt. Thank you very much, Dr. Sean. It's always so interesting to learn about things from the other side of the telescope. Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. The Radio Pet Lady Network is brought to you in part by Spot Platinum, an allergy test to find what in your dog's environment or diet may be causing his scratching or licking. Allergies for which Spot Platinum can make a USDA-approved serum custom-tailored to your dog's specific needs to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done more than 500,000 allergy tests over 25 years. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. We are also supported by Meow Space, a clear ventilated enclosure that can be a one cat feeding space, a litter box station, or even a safe place to nap, designed so that only one cat with a unique access device can enter the see-through box. Meow Space is made in the USA to solve out of litter box problems and individualized feeding needs in multi-cat households. Big enough for large cats to do their business or small dogs to eat their own food in peace. Meow Space benefits the whole family because it keeps dogs and small children out of the litter box too. Go to meowspace.biz. That's meowspace.biz to see for yourself.